earlier today, WGBH's Adam Riley hit the statehouse for an announcement we've all been waiting for. Who will be filling in for John Kerry's, who will be filling John Kerry's Senate seat? And the answer is Mo Cowan, Governor Patrick's former chief of staff. Adam, is this what insiders were expecting?
Well, I think in recent days, maybe I should say recent hours, you mentioned John Keller calling it a few hours before the announcement. I think people had Cowan on their radar. I'm not sure that people thought it was a done deal, though, until this morning. Mm. His name had been out there, but I don't think people regarded him as a lock.
Well, in fact, earlier today, I predicted Carol Fulp. So, right. But I had moved toward an out of the box pick, and that's, I mean, even though he worked for Governor Patrick, one would consider, I think, Mo Cowan an out-of-the-box pick.
I think he is an out-of-the-box mm-hmm. pick. And it's interesting. Before I came down here, I was looking at the reaction to the Cowan pick on the blog Blue Mass Group, which, as many of our listeners will know, is a very passionately liberal voice in the Boston media landscape. And people on Blue Mass Group were not overly thrilled about this pick. They thought that, among other things, that Cowan, for example, has never held elected office. They said, why are we sending a guy into the Senate who's never held elected office at this incredibly high-stakes time in congressional history? Which is a question worth pondering. I think the answer to that, at least in part, is that Patrick has a real affinity, Governor Patrick has a real affinity for biography when it comes to political narrative. We know the governor's narrative, you know, coming from poverty on the south side of Chicago, going to Milton Academy and moving on to Harvard and Harvard Law School and then becoming governor. And I think that the fact that Cowan has something of a similar biography, which he shared with us today in part, I think that was compelling for the governor. The governor said as much. Cowan grew up in a single-parent home. He had a single mother who didn't attend college. And as he put it today, you know, she taught him that if he worked hard and treated people with respect, that anything was possible. And the governor said, quite frankly, you know, I think that it's good to have people with narratives like Mo Cowan's in government.
Okay, well, let's fill in the rest of Mo Cowan's biography for people who don't know. He's at a very prestigious law firm. He's the governor's former chief of staff.
He's been at Mintz Levin, right? One of the high-powered firms of Boston.
Right. So
he'd been chief of staff to Governor Patrick, and before that was the governor's chief legal counsel. So two very important, you know, a low profile in terms of public visibility, but very important statehouse jobs.
So and to the point about the chief of staff, I mean, and this is no small thing. You've got to tell some people who don't want to be told, you're not getting in to see the governor. Your issue is not priority here. And I'm prioritizing for the governor and I'm telling him why and keeping all of that, you know, moving and still walking away with some measure of respect and ability to work with all the folks that want to have the governor's attention.
Yeah, and if you don't do the job right, there can be a backlash. Remember the backlash to Rahm Emanuel when he was President Obama's chief of staff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if anyone's the surrogate for a president or a governor, it's their chief of staff. So, yeah, he effectively was Patrick's – he was the second Patrick on Beacon Hill. And today, when he introduced himself to the media and the public, he made it very clear that his political vision is pretty much identical to Governor Patrick's. I was just going through some of what he had to say before I came down. And at one point, Cowan said, I know that the people of Massachusetts care about jobs, education, and high-quality, affordable health care. I will work in Washington with those interests in mind. And then he turned to the governor and said, just as you do every day in your administration. Mm. Later on, he was asked if there'd be any difference in his political vision vis-a-vis Governor Patrick's. And he said, no, there really isn't any daylight between what I stand for and what the governor stands for.
Well, a couple of things that we should add to his bio, which is really important here, and that he will be the first African-American to represent Massachusetts in the Senate, interim seat or no, since Republican Ed Brooke held that seat from 1966 to 1978.
Long time ago.
That's a long time ago. So, you know, these are whole new days and times. So to have someone in that position is in the way that Governor Patrick's being governor is quite historic. So those are two. So they have that in common as
and
well.
And that was important to the governor. He made that clear telling Jim Browdy maybe a week ago or so that appointing either a person of color or a woman was a priority, as he put it. Then when he appeared on WGBH's Greater Boston and talked to Emily Rooney, he walked that back a little bit, saying that he thought diversity in politics was a good thing and that while those considerations would not be determinative, he would be taking them into account. But that was a clue, I guess. In retrospect, that was a clue that the Cowan pick might have been coming. Although Cowan says he was only informed by the governor yesterday.
I believe that. I take that piece that was in the Globe that seemed to that offered up these numbers of people that we hadn't thought about and pushed Barney Frank's possibilities down further in that point. That's why I came away thinking, oh, it's Carol Folt, because mm-hmm. I then at that point thought whoever it is definitely not somebody we're expecting. So let's go back and talk about the fact that Barney Frank obviously knows where everything is. I always say he knows where the bathrooms are. He knows all the people. He has the relationships, blah, blah, blah. He lobbied for the job publicly. I think that probably annoyed the governor in some way.
I expect you're right.
But, you know, he knows all the issues. He could just step right in and work those relationships and senior relationships, by the way, and bring back whatever is good for Massachusetts.
It doesn't really matter, but it's interesting to ponder what Senator Frank would have been like. And, you know, his reputation is as very much an unapologetic liberal crusader, not someone who's going to try to broker deals between Democrats and Republicans or seek out common ground. He might balk at that characterization, but people think of him as a liberal fighter who wasn't shy when it came to antagonizing Republicans and conservatives. And while I think there's no question that Mo Cowan in his months in the Senate will be, you know, as aggressively liberal as Governor Patrick has been, he probably will not be a sort of a magnet for controversy or a hot button figure in the way that Barney Frank would have been. I mean, Frank has been over the years one of the Democrats that Republicans and conservatives most love to hate. And Cowan doesn't have any of that baggage. As you mentioned, though, he also doesn't have the inside knowledge of how Congress operates that Frank would have brought to the table. And I think that's one of the things, just to harken back to those comments on Blue Mask Group that I mentioned earlier on, I think that's one deficiency, if you will, in Cowan's resume that's giving some liberals pause.
I'm speaking with Adam Riley, WGBH's Adam Riley, Greater Boston's Adam Riley, and we're talking about Governor Deval Patrick's pick of Mo Cowan, his former chief of staff, to be the interim senator. He won't be the senior senator. Elizabeth Warren will be the senior senator.
By a hair.
By a few days, while the special election takes place here. So let me go back to something. So yes, he would not be, I assume he's not going to be a lightning rod, as you suggested, of controversy that Barney Frank could be. We don't know that he would, but he could be. But he also doesn't have those relationships. Right. I have to say that someone who is a partner at Mintz Levin didn't get there by falling off the turnip truck. So we assume that he will be able to do all of the appropriate homework.
Graduate of Duke University, graduate of Northeastern Law School, partner at Mintz Levin, one of the highest powered law firms here. Yep.
So he's going to do all of that and be absolutely prepared to understand what the legislation is all about and where he needs to go to represent us and who he, you know, what he needs to say and all of that. So we're well represented in that way. I don't think anybody has to worry about that.
I think it's clear that he's a very smart and accomplished guy. It's actually interesting to me that the governor was as candid as he was about his interest in appointing either a person of color or a woman a week or two ago, because my take, and this is just my own opinion, is that it kind of does an injustice to Cowan's credentials a little bit. Cowan has plenty of stuff to recommend him as this pick. Whether you think it's a good pick or not, his resume is, as you were just saying, extremely impressive. And I think there are going to be some people out there, because the governor was public saying, I'd like to use this to push diversity in politics. I think there will be some people who will unfairly think that the big thing that Cowan brings to the table is that he's an African-American who served in the Patrick administration. So, Mo Cowan probably isn't too frustrated with the governor, since the governor just made him a member of the United States Senate. But I do wonder if in the back of his mind, even if he won't voice it, there's a little bit of frustration. Like, why'd you cast me as a diversity hire when I'm really much more than that?
Well, some of us would say, depending on how you define diversity hire, that's not a bad thing. But I take your point. I just wanted to stress here that no matter whether or not many may say that he lacks some of the relationships that a Barney Frank would be able to tap into, he certainly has the acumen, the smarts, of that stuff.
He's in his early 40s, as we've talked about. His resume is fantastic.
So we're looking forward to that. And by all accounts, he's easy to work with. So, I think that also serves if you're going to stepping right into some contentious discussions where you've got to make some quick relationships work for you.
He came across in his avail today as a charismatic and also sort of immediately likable person. There was one point where Andy Hiller from WHDH, you know, shot this one of those questions that we in the media like to throw at politicians to knock them off kilter a little bit and see how they react. His question was more or less, how would you compare, you know, today to your wedding day? And
okay.
And Cowan, without much of a pause, said, my wedding day was when I learned that I'm the luckiest man in the world. The day my sons were born was the day I learned the meaning of unconditional love. And today I am humbled and honored as a citizen of Massachusetts. And it was this incredibly artful, politically astute response that I think a lot of seasoned politicians wouldn't necessarily have been able to give.
That's fabulous.
Yeah. He may have done a little, you know, preliminary preparation to have
that
one ready
for that question, but
that's true. That's true. The answer was really good.
You got to just give it to him. Sometimes you just got to give it to him. That was great. All right. What are other insiders saying about this pick? I mean, you mentioned Blue Man's Group and their sort of lukewarmness about it. What are others saying?
Well, the administration handed out a press release at today's event, making a point of showing that there's this sort of broad base of support. Dan Winslow, the Republican state representative who, you know, may be headed for a run for higher office himself down the road, who's a very kind of clever, and I mean that in the best sense of the term, practitioner of political arts, had this to say: Governor Patrick has made an excellent choice in Mo Cowan as interim U.S. Senator. Mo personifies the dignity, intelligence, and calm judgment that we hope are qualities of all members of the U.S. Senate. There were also tributes that the administration got out from Gloria Larson, you know, Republican, talking about Mo Cowan's high IQ and equally high EQ, or I assume emotional quotient.
Mm. And clearly he's demonstrated that.
Yes. one interesting thing to ponder, I think, is what impact, if any, Mo Cowan's selection is going to have on the special election when it occurs. Right now we know that Ed Markey's running on the Democratic side. Steve Lynch is going to declare his candidacy tomorrow. We still don't know who's running on the Republican side. We don't know if Scott Brown's going to run again or not. But I was racking my brain this morning trying to think of whether there was any sort of implication created for the special election by this Mo Cowan pick. And I can't think of any. If the governor had picked, say, Barney Frank, just to come back to that name, it might have increased sort of congressional fatigue, might have gotten some independent voters saying, you know, with Barney Frank replacing John Kerry, we need a fresh face now, and looking to a fresh face if one was available in the special. But I can't think of a way that Cowan is going to either adversely or positively affect either the Democrats or Republicans' chances in the special. I may be missing something, but no scenario springs to mind.
There had been much discussion about, and I guess a little bit from Governor Patrick himself, saying whomever I select for this interim space is not really looking down the road for anything else. But I've already heard many people say, hey, this sets up Mo Cowan. If he wanted to go for the governorship, he's in a perfect place to do it.
Well, for that scenario to unfold, Mo Cowan would have to completely go back on what seemed like a pretty ironclad vow he made today. He was asked if this was the beginning of a career in electoral politics, and he said no. He said no unequivocally. He said, you know, this is the beginning and end of my political career. I'm not running for anything when this appointment's done. I have no interest in running for anything. So if he down the road tried to parlay this into another job, I think he'd look a little bad in the process. Maybe he could overcome that, but he sounds like a guy who's not planning on being in this for the long haul.
Well, I just point out,
things
can
change.
Sure. You know, then Senator from Illinois said, I'm not running for president, and, you know,
this is
the rest is history.
This is true. I would be, based on how emphatic his language was, I would be surprised if there's more to come. But you're right. People change their minds. We shall see.
I just want to note one thing about Mo Cowan because we had a discussion here on Boston Public Radio about an organization called Access, and it really honors people who are first timers in college and lifts them up for the community at large, for young people to see as a role model that you too can do it. So when you talk about that biography that he shares with Governor Patrick. That's one of the things that he also wanted to share, and he's very active in that organization. And it's now with this, I think it adds to the biography in another way. Kids can look at him and say, gee, I can start from this small town in the South.
Where my mother grew up in the segregated South.
Right,
yeah.
You know, and then I can work my way up, go to, you know, many prestigious schools, and then I can be thought of as smart enough to represent a whole state in this way, and it's quite an honor.
I don't think there's any question the governor wanted to make a positive example of Mo Cohen in that way, and he said as much. He was asked about the fact that, you know, we've now had a African-American president, African-American governor, now an African-American senator from Massachusetts, and he said, I think there's value in kids of all backgrounds, whether it's, you know, kids who are members of quote-unquote minority groups or kids who are growing up in poverty, to be able to look at people like this and see what they can achieve.
Well, interesting choice. I got to say, when you look back a few years ago and remember that the governor from Illinois, Governor Blagojevich, made a choice for interim senator who has really pretty much been forgotten. That's going to be an entirely different scenario here in Massachusetts because Governor Patrick picked Mo Cohen.
He did indeed, and we'll see how he fares over the next few months.
All right, and special election next for you, huh, Adam Riley?
Yeah, yet another one. They just keep coming here in Massachusetts.
All right, I've been talking with GBH's Adam Riley. Adam, always good to talk politics with you.
Thanks, Kelly.
Edgar B. Herbert III
Callie
is
Crosser,
here.
What is happening?
You got it.
We're going to go from the political to the literary, and we're going to be talking with Rose Styron. She is the wife of author William Styron. He, of course, wrote Confessions of Nat Turner. He wrote Darkness Visible, a very famed memoir about his battle with depression. So she's written a book, well, edited a book, a collection of his letters, his life in letters. We're going to talk about that. It's really cool stuff.
All right. Looking forward to it. I'm Callie Crossley.
I'm Edgar B. Herbert III, and this is Boston Public Radio.